Welcome back to the Rarely Heard Fabry Disease Podcast, a 9-part series devoted to Fabry disease. Throughout this series, we hear from Fabry disease experts, patients, and caregivers who share practical advice, insights, and perspectives on living with this rare disease. Rarely Heard Fabry Disease is initiated and funded by Takeda Pharmaceuticals and is intended for an international audience outside the USA. In this episode, Martinez is joined by Dr. Charles Lorenzo to share their practical advice on how genetic counseling can help individuals and families affected by Fabry disease.
Hello, it's good to be back again. I'm a Professor Charles Lorenzo. I'm a clinical geneticist and professor of neurogenetics and biochemical genetics at the Faculdade of Medicina of São José do Rio Preto in São Paulo, Brazil. My interests include the clinical and molecular aspects of leukodystrophies, lysosomal disorders of the brain, and inborn errors of metabolism that manifest in adulthood. We also treat patients with lysosomal storage diseases, and we were involved in the pivotal early clinical trials for the treatment of Fabry disease with chaperone therapy and enzyme replacement therapy, or ERT. I am also a member of many medical professional societies, such as the Brazilian Clinical Genetics Society and the American Society of Human Genetics. Now, I am delighted to have Martinez with me again for this episode. Martinez, it's wonderful to talk to you again. Before we start, could you tell us more about yourself?
Professor Lorenzo, and hello to our dear listeners of Rarely Heard Podcast. My name is Martinez, and I'm a Fabry patient. Well, in my everyday life, I work in a company which brings the new treatments for patients. Well, I need to tell you that I'm the only patient of Fabry disease in my family. And when I was diagnosed, Dr. Geneticist had to make the examination for my mother, because it's the only member family from where I could have got this disease. But it appeared that she did not have the Fabry disease, and the further genetic testing assessment for her sister and for her sister's two daughters was not useful, because the disease in our family arose with me. So I think it was some spontaneous mutation or something else. I think Dr. Lorenzo could be able to comment on this. Well, I like doing some interesting things in my free time, which is spending time in nature, traveling the world, traveling my wonderful country, and of course, meeting friends. As well, I like learning languages, which is useful when I'm traveling to other countries, collecting coins, sometimes playing poker, chess, occasionally, very rare occasions. When I play tennis, I'm doing some other interesting activities. As well, I am a member of the Lithuanian Association of People with Organ Transplants, which is a member of the Fabry International Network.
Martinez, can you share a little bit of your diagnostic journey? You told us about that you were the first person in your family. There are no other cases. But how it began, how they raised the suspicion of Fabry?
Well, this Fabry journey of my life was really a long one, and it took almost 20 years from the first symptoms to the diagnosis of Fabry disease. And I started being very ill when I was a child, maybe 4 or 6 years old. Then I started to have fevers very often, not going to school. And I started having these acroparesthesias, which is very severe burning pains in my hands and feet. And finally, my kidneys, which were deteriorating for ages, since I maybe was 12 years old, they deteriorated so badly that I lost them, I should say. And I started dialysis, hemodialysis, so which I've been taking 3 times a week. And luckily, after some time in 2008, I got my kidney transplant, and as well as my Fabry diagnosis was established, and I started to get the treatment from Fabry disease.
When I analyzed your kidneys, maybe they do a kidney biopsy and they saw the Fabry storage?
They did not do the biopsy at first, because when I was at the geneticist's office, they found these angiokeratomas, which is small red dots on skin. And this led to diagnosis. Then they found out this mark on my body, and they decided that they need to make an enzyme assay and to do a genetic testing of the gene. And what led us to seek for medical care is that I was always ill, you know. I was spending time at home rather than going to the streets, to the yard to play with other children and reading books instead of running and climbing the trees. And this was the reason why I spent many, many, many weeks and maybe even months in hospitals.
When you had the fever, you felt like more fatigue, more exhaustion, or the fever increased the pain?
Well, as far as I remember, the first fevers, which were like I was 4 or 5 years old, so they were simple fevers with just a high temperature and being tired, being maybe nauseous sometimes. But I would spend maybe a week at home lying in bed or even sometimes more. Sometimes the parents would take me to the hospital. I would spend there for a couple of weeks, for example. But the pain, which I remember very well, maybe started when I was like teenager, like 12, 13 or something like that.
So finally reaching a Fabry diagnosis after so many years of visiting all those specialists must have been an incredible, complex emotional journey for you. How did your family members react?
Well, I remember this very well. Like my reaction was the same as my family members' reaction, I think, because when you have some symptoms, when you experience them every day and they are very, very serious, you know, very strong symptoms, you always want to know what is happening with you. The first stage was learning about the diagnosis, which is, you know, my life. What symptoms I have, it is related to some disease, you know, Fabry disease. And the second is asking a question. So, yeah, I know I'm having a Fabry disease. So what now? Do I have some treatment available or not? Will I spend the whole life like this or something is going to be better? And the best news were like diagnosis of the disease. And the second is that there is a treatment, you know. My geneticist told that very good news for me. And I was really happy because some diseases don't have possibility to be treated. We're not talking about to be cured, but even to be treated that the symptoms would not get worse and worse, you know. And Fabry is in some ways good disease because you can be treated, you can be maintained. The situation, what you have now is maintained and you are not getting worse.
Yeah, and you're right. For example, we know that less than 10% of the rare diseases, they have a specific therapy. So Fabry disease is one of the fortunate ones that we have more than one therapy for Fabry disease. And it's nice to know that your family also have this feeling that we finally had a diagnosis, or this relief of having a diagnosis. It's very nice to see your family being so supportive. And I believe that it was very helpful to make sense of the diagnosis. When you received the diagnosis and you know that was a genetic disorder that could be a family disease, how you shared this information with your family?
Well, you know, all my childhood and all my adolescence, I was ill. And my mother, my grandmother, and my whole family was very, very supportive. And they used to take me to the doctors, to the hospitals. We would travel almost the whole family to the doctor. And they just found out about my disease just, I think, the same moment as I did. So, the relief moment happened that day, you know, when the doctor said that you have this disease and you are able to get the treatment. And yeah, I understand that some people don't want to say about his or her disease to the relatives, to the family. But we need to know that, to understand that it's very important to share your problems with your close ones, to get more support, to get maybe advice, to make the life easier, because hiding that you have some diseases, I think it's not very useful, especially from your family.
No, you're right. And for example, since in many cases it's also a family disease, other members of the family can benefit from the diagnosis as well. You said that you are the only one. Usually we call these de novo mutations. They are mutations that happen as the first time and they were not inherited from the parents, but it happened in the first cell divisions when you have the fusion of this spermatozoid from the father with the egg from the mother. And in this case, for example, it was not inherited, but from now on, it can pass for other generations.
Yes, it's very important to understand that you did not inherit the disease, but you can give to your children. You know, my case is interesting in one aspect, that we know that sometimes when the child has a genetic disease, one of the parents or mother or father feels guilt that, oh, it might be from me. Oh, father says it might be from me. In my family was that nobody is guilty. It's a wrong word, I think, to say the guilt that your children has a disease, but it's easier to understand. And I would say nobody must feel guilty for what's happened.
It happens a lot with the mothers when they have the mutation, the X chromosome, and they realize that the child, both girl or boy, inherited this chromosome from her. And we try to explain that they are not guilty of anything. They did not know about the disease. But sometimes it's especially when the mother sees the son suffering a lot, it's almost impossible not to feel guilty. But so we need to talk to the families to explain that nobody is guilty for a genetic disorder.
Yes, indeed. Nobody is guilty because you didn't know. Of course, you did all the best to have a healthy son or daughter, but it happened. Mutations just sometimes happen.
And for example, I know that you have a girlfriend, and this is a delicate situation for some patients. And how to tell to your partner that you have a diagnosis of a genetic disease? For you, this happened naturally?
Well, you know, I wanted to be fair in this situation because when you have some relationship and after maybe 2, 3, 4 years, you didn't hide that, but you just didn't tell that. And when I met her, we had some dates, you know, and I said that, yeah, we might continue doing this together, you know, but I need to tell you one very interesting and one important fact about myself so that you would know that and that you will make decision of what are we doing next. I'm really happy to live in this age, you know, and in this year because the science is really, really very powerful right now. And we know what is the pattern of inheritance of this disease. We know that all our boys would be healthy and all our girls would be affected by Fabry disease. So my diagnosis was established. And then I went through the genetic counseling. And can you tell us why it's important and what is it, the genetic counseling?
That's a very good point, Martinez. When you talk about Fabry disease and other genetic disorders, we're talking most of the times of family syndromes, family disorders. So usually it's not only one person affected, but also a family that had the impact of the disease. So it's very important when you have a diagnosis of a genetic disorder, in the case such as Fabry disease, we need to undergo a genetic testing. And after that, a genetic counselor before and after the test to explain the results and how this can impact the family. It's very important, for example, in the past, when you have a diagnosis of Fabry disease, we have the pedigree and the genetic testing of the family. And so that came from the mothers. There was the idea that the mothers are only just carriers of the mutation. And we thought that they were not affected. Now we know that even female patients, they can be so severe affected as male patients because the women, they have two X chromosomes. Usually one of the chromosomes has a mutation and the other one does not have the mutation. And depend on the way the system can inactivate one of the chromosomes, it happens in a very random way in every organ of the woman. And when this happens, if the system inactivates more the chromosome that has the mutation, the woman will be less affected. This is very interesting because we call this the X random inactivation. It happens on all the mammals. This is the difference between women and men. Men only carry one X chromosome. So we can have an affected male or a not affected male. But when you're talking about women, we can have a woman that can have a lot of symptoms, women that can have less or almost no symptom, and we can have some women that can have some of the features of the disease, but affecting only one organ, for example, the heart or the kidney or sometimes the brain. So it's very important to have this diagnosis. If you would like to know more about the specifics about how the Fabry genetics work, we strongly recommend you guys to turn into the episode 1 in which Dr. Charles Gennaro gave a detailed explanation of how genetics works in Fabry disease. So this GLL gene mutation tends to run in families. Most families living with Fabry disease have unique pathogenic variants, unique mutations, but we do not know yet how different mutations affect the way the disease manifests. But it's very important to screen the mutations in the family, because some family members may be donor candidates for patients who require, for example, a kidney transplant. In this case, genetic testing to ensure that the family member isn't affected by the disease prior to the transplant would be very, very important. But sometimes you can have a new mutation. The patient that is in front of you can be the first one in that family, but he can still pass the mutation to other generations. So genetic counseling is also very, very important. It's very interesting to know that the type of mutation can sometimes help to understand the impact in the patient. For example, we know that some mutations, they can have more enzyme activity. So these patients, usually they have late symptoms. They can develop more symptoms only later in life. Other patients, they can have more severe mutation and they have very decreased enzyme activity and they can show symptoms since early childhood. It's very important to know that, for example, if the mother is not very affected, it does not mean that her daughter will be the same as hers, because the pattern of X inactivation is different from one woman to another woman, even the same family. So, for example, we had a case that the woman, she had the first stroke with 20 years of age, and she had like 15 strokes. And her mother, that also has the mutation, never had a stroke in her life and did not have any symptoms. And now this woman had a daughter, and the daughter only had the acroparesthesia. She's now is 32 years old. She did not have any stroke so far. So in the same family, we had three different types of X inactivation.
This is very important to know in planning families, because the for example, a Fabry patient man will have all the healthy boys. And some of the daughters might be healthy, and some of daughters might be mildly affected, and some daughters might be very affected. So it's like a lottery, let's say. Is that a correct expression?
Well, yes, but you should remember that, for example, if a male patient has Fabry disease, all his daughters will inherit the X chromosome from him, because the daughters inherited one X chromosome from the father and one X chromosome from the mother. So if the father is affected, all the daughters will have the X chromosome from the father and the other X chromosome from the mother. So they will all inherit the mutation, but does not mean they will be affected. So you can have some daughters that will be very healthy. They showed no symptoms, but we can have some daughters that can be very affected. This we cannot predict, but we know that, for example, if a Fabry male patient has a son, he will not have the disease, because a man passes the Y chromosome to the son and the disease is in the X chromosome. But you can have also the new mutation, the novo mutation, that can happen only in that generation. It's rare, but can happen. And they say that usually with X-linked diseases, one-third of the cases, they are new mutations. They are not inherited from the parents.
Thank you for a nice explanation. Professor Lorenzo, I was diagnosed with Fabry more than 10 years ago, and the diagnosis was established by a geneticist. And geneticist told me everything about the Fabry disease. And I sometimes hear that something like genetic counseling exists. Can you please tell what the difference is between genetic counselor and geneticist?
Well, genetic counselor is the process to make the family aware of the genetic disease. Usually the genetic counselor is only possible after the genetic diagnosis. So in some countries, we have a specialist called genetic counselor. He or she is not a physician. It's a trained professional with a master's degree on genetic counseling. So usually it's a post-graduation course that brings together knowledge from the genetics field and knowledge from the psychological and the anthropology field as well. Because the genetic counselor is a very complex process. It's not only the information about the inheritance or the way you pass the genes, but also to be sure that the family is able to understand the impact of the disease and the challenges related to the religious or ethical beliefs that this family or the couple they have regarding this diagnosis. The genetic counselor can also help and guide the family to understand the ways and the techniques that are available to, for example, have a healthy baby without the mutation, or even if it is the case, to adopt a child to avoid passing the gene. And it's important that even though the genetic counselor is a profession that is not present in many countries, the clinical geneticist can do, always do the genetic counseling. So if you go to the clinical geneticist, he will do the genetic counseling with the patient. But if you have the opportunity to go to have a genetic counselor, it's very important because the genetic counselor can spend more time with the family and can also explain in different approaches how the diagnosis of the disease made by the clinical geneticist can impact on the family. So sometimes the genetic counselor can be very helpful to the clinical geneticist because it can spend more time with the family explaining the mechanisms and the impact of the disease.
I understand that the genetic counselor is a really useful role for families, for parents, to get the information, to get the support for family planning. And family planning might be really challenging topic for parents with Fabry disease. And there are many things parents could worry about, from potentially passing on the disease to their children, to worrying about the child's future and how Fabry could affect their lives. Can a genetic counselor help patients with such things?
Yes, because the genetic counselor, it also has some training in psychology. The genetic counselor can be a bridge between the scientific part of the disease and the emotional part of the disease. I usually see the genetic counselor as a very humane professional that can bring the emotional aspects of the disease and how it interferes with the family. Sometimes I must say that some patients, they feel more free to talk about some issues with the genetic counselor than with me, with the physician, because sometimes they are afraid of telling something to me, especially, for example, when the family discovered that they are pregnant, that they have a baby, and they knew that there was a risk of having a child affected, but sometimes it happens. So I don't know why they are afraid of telling me that, because they think that maybe I will be blaming them. And no, I will not, for sure, I don't. Genetic counseling does not mean that you are telling the patient what to do. Genetic counseling, you enable the patient to understand the risks and benefits, the pros and cons of having the disease and how they can make your own decisions. So never I will blame patient for anything. But sometimes when this happens, I know that they feel more comfortable in telling the genetic counselor first.
Yes, indeed, it's a very, very good idea to meet with the genetic counselor. Because as I understood that the genetic counselor has more time. And I think that these are very sensitive topics to discuss with someone. And this discussion might take longer than hour and or 2 hours, I would say. And sometimes even more. Can you tell us more about the reproductive options available to aspiring parents?
Well, usually, for example, when you have a male patient, we know that the boys will not be inheriting the mutation from the father, but all the girls, they will inherit the mutation. And usually we can, in these situations, we can do some selection of embryos for the male embryos. It's possible to do this. It's cheaper than to do the what we call PGD. PGD is preimplantation genetic diagnosis. In PGD, we look for the mutation in the embryos before implanting in the mother. So usually PGD is much more expensive because it's not only in vitro fertilization, but you combine in vitro fertilization with genetic screening. So it can be very expensive for some countries. I know that in some countries, for example, in Middle East, they offer to all the couples that can have a genetic disorder in the offspring. But I know that, for example, for many other countries, it's not available. In my country, for example, PGD, the families need to pay out of their pockets, and it is very expensive. In other moments, we can, for example, if the mother is affected, the best approach would be to do the PGD. because you can screen for the mutation in the embryos. In some cases, the family, they decide to have adoption. In other cases, they decide not to have any kids because they're afraid of passing. But it's very important to talk to the family about this, because I had two situations with female patients that were affected with Fabry disease. In one patient, she was the first one from the family, and she had a moderate to severe Fabry disease, even though she was a female patient. And she decided, I don't want any child of mine to have this kind of problem. So she and her husband decided to do the PGG, and they had now a healthy baby, female baby, not a baby anymore. She's like 5 years old, and they are very happy because they know that she'll never be affected of the disease, and she'll not have the decision to pass or no or not the gene. On the other hand, we had another female patient that she comes from a family with many generations affected by Fabry disease, and she told me, I don't want my child to have the disease, but at the same time, if my parents decided to do PGG, I will not be born. Although I have Fabry disease, I am very happy. So I don't think it's very good to choose the embryos, because sometimes living with Fabry disease can make you a better person. And I totally understood their decisions, and they decided to have a baby without any kind of fertilization process or prenatal genetic diagnosis. And they have a male baby. Unfortunately, he is also affected by Fabry disease, but he's very smart. And I must say that the couple is very happy. They know that he has, in any point, he will need to start treatment, but they feel so happy with him that they felt that they made the right decision. So our role as a clinical geneticist is not to judge anybody. It's to give the tools so the people choose what's the best for them. And of course, you can also do the prenatal diagnosis, that you can do the diagnosis during the pregnancy. Usually you can do around 10 to 12 weeks of pregnancy when you do from the placental tissue, or you can do between 12 and 16 weeks when you do from amniotic fluid. So usually if you are a female patient, you want to be pregnant, it's very important to talk not only to your clinical geneticist, but also to the obstetrician and make them talk to each other, because sometimes the obstetrician do not know a lot about the Fabry disease and they need to know, because the pregnancy can have some complications that are not a very big issue if everybody have the knowledge about Fabry disease.
Okay, and one more question about this diagnosis. So I've heard that in early pregnancy, if the woman is having a male baby, in the blood starts to appear some gene product, and the woman may be sure that she is going to have a child which is a male. Can you comment on that?
Yes, now we can do this. It's very interesting, because you know that the in the blood of the mother, this is a little bit of the DNA from the fetus. You can have the diagnosis of the fetal sex in the first 2 months of pregnancy. That's very, very important. And there's a technique that they are also developing, not only to see the sex, but also to see some diseases like Down syndrome, Patau syndrome, and some chromosomal problems. But the best application of this technique is to discover the fetal sex. Because if it's a male, you see the Y chromosome, and you can differentiate from the mother. And even if it's a female, you can see the difference in the X chromosome. Well, thank you, Martinez, for being with us today in our conversation. I believe we can say that this podcast today, we talked about very important issues in the Fabry disease regarding genetic counseling, how it affects the family, the importance of receiving a genetic counselor after a Fabry disease diagnosis, and how the family can enable this diagnosis and the impact of this diagnosis in helping them in choosing reproductive options for future offspring, and also how to deal with the impact of having a genetic disorder in your family.
Thank you very much, Professor Lorenzo, for having me here, for the interesting discussion and useful knowledge you provided us. Let's hope that our listeners will find much useful information and will apply that in their lives. And let's hope that the genetic counselor will become more common in all the countries in the world. Thank you very much.
That's it for this episode of the Rarely Heard Fabry Disease Podcast. Thank you for listening, and we hope you enjoyed the discussion with Martinez and Dr. Lorenzo. Support the podcast by subscribing, sharing it with others, or leaving a rating and review. In the next episode, Dr. Bechtold Wielden will join us again to share some common issues patients with rare diseases face and tell us about resources available to help patients. This podcast series is initiated and funded by Takeda Pharmaceuticals and is intended for an international audience outside the USA.